It's the best time of the year. Football season.
Atlantic keeps it, runs 20, 15, to the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Joel Atlantic!
Your number one source for Cyclones football. It's former Cyclones talking Cyclones on CycloneFanatic.com.
Landing out of the shotgun, looking to throw. He fires to the end zone for Daly. Touchdown, Iowa State!
This is Barely Audible with Jeff Woody, Zach Spears, and Austin Arnott on CycloneFanatic.com.
Yes, welcome to this week's edition of Barely Audible right here on CycloneFanatic.com. This is for Cyclone football fans, brought to you by three former Iowa State players, myself, Zach Spears, former running back Jeff Woody, and quarterback Austin Arnott. Today, we'll break down and put a bow on the 41-20 loss from Saturday to TCU. The guys and I will talk about some of the improvements the team has made, the situation under center, the offensive line, and we'll move ahead and take a look at Saturday's home game against San Jose State. So with that, I'll bring on the guys and get started. All right, Jeff, so let's talk about some of the positives, if there were any, that you saw in this game and some improvements. I feel like there were. I feel like the team's finally shown some improvement. As far as the positives and improvements from this week's loss to TCU, what did you see, Jeff?
Well, I really liked it because we finally found an offensive line that wants to compete. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was Brian Sheeta was the fill-in guard.
He's a walk-on, right?
He's a walk-on. Walk-on redshirt senior. We've got two former walk-ons starting on the offensive line right now, which is unheard of
in
Division
I.
In the Big 12, to have walk-on linemen. Because you can have, like, walk-on skill dudes. Because little guys, like, there's way less in space. So if you miss on a little guy, like, it's just hard to have a big dude who's also good that you miss on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, it's really hard to have one walk-on lineman. We have two. And I think for the most part, the thing that, like, that I was really harping on last week is that we didn't see competitiveness. Guys weren't trying to win their individual battles. That was different this week, where the offensive line was actually trying to win their battles. And they may not have won it every time, and they may not even be that good, but they were at least fighting to win, which is how we finally saw Mike open up and run for almost 100 yards.
Yeah.
So that was a positive. I think another positive, which may seem like a negative, is that our secondary was in the right spots for the most part, but they didn't end up making the play at the end. So there was usually pretty tight coverage, but they didn't play the ball very well. And that stuff can be taught. Like, once you get to where you're going to be, you can play the ball. Like, that's just getting more reps. The hard part to learn is where you have to be at certain points. And I think we're getting that in the secondary. So for the most part, I did think it was improvement, and correct me if I'm wrong, when you guys were watching that game, didn't it just feel like you were watching a scrimmage or a practice rather than actually watching a game?
Yeah.
Or was that just me?
Yeah. I mean, there was parts of it that felt like that, especially in the second half. I get that feeling of just like, I don't know, I don't want to say not as serious, or it just wasn't an electric and alive atmosphere as you get on a college football Saturday, especially in the second half, if that's what you were getting at.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to think of. Like, it just didn't feel like a really intense atmosphere. Like, it felt like we were just kind of coming to watch, you know, maybe the twos were going to get some situational punt defense.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it was just, like, it didn't feel like a game, which for where Iowa State's at right now, it's weird, but that's kind of almost okay.
Yeah.
And again, hoping that gets competitive. And actually, based on the improvement that we saw to this point, that's a possibility that we're winning games by the end of the year, maybe. But it just right now, that's fine.
Austin, your positives / improvements from the TCU game that you saw or took away, if any?
Well, you guys touched on it a little bit. Mike Warren, obviously, you know, first of all, I like seeing him getting the ball 23 times. That's great. That's an improvement. Nearly 100 yards. You know, he accepted the challenge. We talked about it last week. I think he really, like you guys talked about his military background and the type of kid he is. He accepted the challenge and said, okay, you know, and we block better. We know that. We'll talk about that later. We block better up front. But I do have one perfect thing that Iowa State did well.
Perfect.
Actually, completely perfect, yeah.
What was
Cole Nett was 2 for 2.
Oh, yeah.
Field goal.
Yeah.
And perfect extra points as well. So there is one positive to take away there. You know, and I don't know if you guys saw the game preview today. Cole Nett is on the cover of that thing. How about that, man?
Wow.
The kicker is on the cover of the game preview.
Represent for the kickers, man.
Yeah. So, but no, they improved. But it's hard to, you know, as a fan, like you guys reiterated when you're talking about it, how it looked like a scrimmage in the second half. Yeah, that's a good thing because it looks more comfortable for them. But in the same sense, it's a bad thing because we need a team who's going to be, you know, we are not going to beat anyone besides Kansas and possibly San Jose State with our talent alone. So we need the extras. We need that blue-collar work mentality that we all talked about when we were there. You know, that excitable energy when you come on the field. You know, you miss a guy like Levi Peters this year. And who was that guy on our team? You know, Chantrell Johnson was a guy on our team who was very excitable all the time. That got
Who's got a single out? Did you see that?
Yeah, how about that? That's great.
He's a Sanger.
He's a Sanger. With an A. So, Sanger with an A.
Yeah, absolutely. We just need that excitable energy all the time. And I don't know who that guy is right now, but we need to find him.
So I was obviously in a – I was at Champaign, Illinois this weekend at the University of Illinois game against Western Michigan. We have a couple guys on our staff while we played at Iowa State there at Western Michigan. So my girlfriend lives real close to Champaign, so I was up there. I was at a tailgate party all day long, and I started talking to this guy. His name was Michael, and he ended up being an Iowa State graduate, huge Cyclone fan. And when he found out who I was, he realized that I was the Zach from Barely Audible with Jeff Woody and Austin Arnaud. and he listens to the podcast every single week. And he's a fellow Cyclone fanatic. And he says his weekly ritual every single day, he's a salesman, is getting in his truck and playing all the podcasts all week long and reading all the content on CycloneFanatic.com. So we certainly appreciate him. But he brought up a great point to me. And it was such a great point. And it's something that's always been on my mind since I was done playing at Iowa State. And I thought, what better part to ask and who better to ask it to than to the man himself, Austin Arnaud. The quarterback play since Austin's departure in 2010 has been so inconsistent. And we have not had a stable starting quarterback since Austin Arnaud left. We've gone through 5 different starting quarterbacks in 5 different years, and multiple of them have been within the same year. We've got, since Austin left, the ones that I rattle off the top of my head, Steele Jantz, Sam Richardson, Jared Barnett, Grant Rohawk, Joel Lanning, and this Park kid is likely going to start at some point this year. Austin, what is the cause of this? Why is a Big 12 football program, they cannot find any stability at quarterback?
Well, I think you look at kind of the track record. And when Coach Rhodes first got here, we had Coach Herman.
Yep.
And after we had Coach Herman, you kind of see we had Mangino, we had Mess, we had Sturdy. There's a lot of moving parts in that offense. But to go back, let's rewind a little bit. We were talking about when Herman was here. Even when Herman was here and Steele took the job and then JB took it away from him, looking at both those kids, and nothing against Steele or JB, JB was too young to probably be in a leadership position at that time.
Yeah.
And Steele is a very quiet guy. Steele's a very quiet guy, did his own thing. You know, heck of a football player. But this program, and especially a program like Iowa State, where, you know, like we talked about, guys, we're not getting the best talent. Although now those guys are recruiting the best talent in the country. There's no doubt about that. But we don't have the best talent. So we've got to find – you've got to have leaders. And that's the one thing that I think has been almost irreplaceable on the teams that we played on. And then some of the teams that you guys played on as well. You know, you had a leader. You guys had AJ and Jake. For me, for my class, you know, we had Reggie Stevens. We had me. We had A-Rob. We had Ben Lamont. Yeah. We had O'Connell. We had guys that were going to step up and lead that team. Even, you know, Jeremiah George was the leader of that team that you were on, Jeff, that struggled. Mm-hmm. I think in this situation and the way that Iowa State has played in the past, you know, we've been a spread offense where the quarterback is the one who gets a lot of the blame and a lot of the, you know, allure of being in a spread offense. The guys that we've had in place, and another guy, Sam Richardson, great kid, great talent, very quiet. Grant Rohawk. You know, Grant, I didn't really know Grant that well. I talked to him recently this year about, you know, him being at Buffalo, but another kid who Grant was, he's kind of an odd guy. You know, he's from California. He can't help that about himself, but he was another guy who was a great football player, could spin it, but not a true leader. And Joel Lanning, I think, has the potential to be a great leader. But right now, on that offense, I don't know who leads that offense. And that's the systemic problem, in my opinion. You guys know, you play with me. I mean, I may have come out and thrown five interceptions, but everyone looked at me and said, hey, we know this guy's going to try his best. He's going to work his hardest. He's going to be accountable, be trustworthy, and take all the blame. I don't know if we have that right now. We don't have an emotional leader who is going to step up and say, hey, that was my fault. Let's turn this thing around. Let's find a way to do it. So I think it just comes with maturity. We've had a lot of guys come through the program since 2010 who have played quarterback who maybe weren't the most mature, and that's something that you gotta go with. And I'm by no self, no imagination of the word saying that I was the most mature college student ever, because I wasn't. That's a fact. But when it came to Saturday, and we all huddled up, I always found myself in the middle, and I was always talking to guys and always encouraging. Sometimes I see Joe Lanning go to the sideline, and he just sits by himself with Alan Lazard. I always made it a focal point to run over the offensive line, see what they saw, talk with Coach Plow, get on the headset with Coach Herman, you know, because you think about it, you know, Joel and Alan are both juniors, correct?
Yep.
They only get a few more shots at this thing, man. I mean, Alan's going to have aspirations of playing in the NFL, which he probably will, but, you know, you look at these guys who are on the outside looking in, you only got a few cracks at it, man. So you want to do the most that you can do in the time you have allotted. So I think what's got to happen is there's got to be more step up with leadership, and there's got to be more accountability at the quarterback position as a whole, because, you know, whether you like it or not, even when Mike Warren carries the ball 23 times, Joel Lanning still threw it 21 times and ran it 11 times.
Yeah.
So he is the guy that has the ball on every snap. So that's the way they got to handle it.
And to be fair, I do think that Joel, there's times when he needs to be more vocal. And I think he's, like you said, I think he's capable of doing it. But he's on four offensive coordinators in four seasons.
Yeah.
And
absolutely. It's really hard to lead and say, hey, guys, step it up. Come on, we need to do this. You're going to get the next one when you have a pretty shaky idea of what you're doing yourself. So give the kid, I mean, this isn't necessarily saying an indictment to anybody, but give the kid, I don't know, 18 months with the same offensive coordinator and see what he does, that he's finally able to learn what he's expected to do, because then he can start coaching other people rather than just, you know, trying to cover his own ass because he's not exactly sure what his role is. So it's partially because our quarterbacks aren't executing like they need to, but it's also partly because since 2011, we've had Tom Herman, Mark Mangino, Todd Sturdy, and now Coach Manning.
And
Coach Messingham, excuse me. So since we have five offensive coordinators in six seasons, there's no chance that a quarterback can feel comfortable or an offensive line can feel comfortable when you have that much turnover. So give it some stability. Give it some time, and we'll see how these kids finally develop.
Yeah.
And absolutely, I'm not banging on Joel Lanning at all. And that's the first thing I said. I came out and said, there's been a lot of moving parts in this offense. I agree 100%. And, you know, that's the number one thing that we need is repetition, repetition, repetition with him.
Yeah. And I want to bring up something else. So, you know, a former teammate of all of ours and a good friend of the three of ours is Carter Bykowski. And he was draft picked by the Niners, played for the Vikings, and he wanted to come on the show last week to talk football, but was in the process of being cut by the Vikings. And he wanted to come on this week, and I guess we're going to break kind of semi-news here. He's going to be signing with the Atlanta Falcons at some point tomorrow.
All
so
right.
By the time you're listening to this, hopefully that's already done. He was going to come on, but he's in the middle of packing up and moving to Atlanta as we speak, so congratulations to him. But he was texting.
He picked a good time to go to Atlanta now, rather than doing it in like July.
And right before the winter hits in Minnesota.
Exactly.
So
it's a good transition time.
He was texting me throughout the game as he normally does. And, you know, he said that the game's tough to watch. I mean, that's no secret. You know, everyone's having trouble watching the team as not a lot of things that they do are fluid. But he brought up a good point, and I don't think he's breaking any news here, and I think we all know it. But he said, you know, good thing Campbell is such a good recruiter and has so much, you know, momentum behind his recruiting right now, because in order for him to turn this thing around, you know, sooner rather than later, his recruits are going to have to be very good and very good early, because what we're seeing now is how bad Rhodes and his staff whiffed on recruiting in the last 3 to 4 years. You know, and obviously you hit on a few of them. Mike Warren's one of them. And, you know, Mike Warren, we got to see him a little bit better yesterday. or on Saturday, we got to see him produce, and we got the ball in his hands, and the Cyclones really made it about him. And, you know, it felt good to see him back on the field again. And the question goes back to the quarterback position here. And Austin, I want to pitch this to you, Jeff. You could piggytail off of whatever Austin says and take it however you want. But we've now seen a very good sample size, I feel like, of what Joel Landing can do at quarterback. And we're starting to see what Jacob Park can do at quarterback as well. Who, in your opinion, gives this team the best chance to win at the quarterback spot?
For me, right now, for me, I say Joel Landing for the simple fact that he brings more tools to the table than Park does right now. And Joel's, hey, we all know, and we just talked about it. You know, a lot of change in the offensive coordinators. Joel's far from a finished product, but I felt like he was a lot better in the pocket on Saturday. He made a few plays with his feet, scored 2 touchdowns on the run. Number one, though, guys, didn't turn the ball over. That's great. If Iowa State's in that game and you know, the defense gave up some points and obviously the offense didn't convert as much as they want to on third down, but he played winning football on Saturday, I think. With the exception of, we got to do better at this, and we talked about this last week, and I'll hit on it later when we talk about offensive production with Alan Lazard. He only had 6 yards per completion, mm-hmm. and that's something that we cannot do. 6 yards is great if you get 6 yards every single time. That's, you know, you want to be above 10. You want to have, you know, shots downfield. You want to have those intermediate routes working, not where you're scrambling and then hitting a guy on the run. So we got to be more consistent with what he's doing. But I think there's no doubt in my mind, and it doesn't help. You know, he had a couple drops out there as well.
A couple, five.
That also needs to be said. He's not getting a ton of help from everyone either.
Exactly. He's got a young offensive line, actually an inexperienced offensive line. He's got a good running back, good receiver. But he's not getting a lot of help from other guys. Daly dropped a couple out there, and Trevor Ryan really stepped up, which I hit earlier. But I think Joel's the guy. I like what Park can do. I think Park throws a better football than Joel. Mm-hmm. Joel's still working on his control, and Joel's got a big arm. We all know that. He's, you know, sometimes it's just like he gets so fired up and he just zings one in there. But Park throws a great touch ball, a decent intermediate ball, the deep ball. But Joel Landing's got to be the leader of this team, and they set him up to do so. So I think he took steps forward on Saturday, no turnovers, scored a couple rushing touchdowns, and for the most part was making plays. We got to be better on third down. There's no doubt about that.
What about you, Jeff?
Yeah, I think Joel's the guy for right now. And the reason why is because, honest to goodness, I think, like, Joel's going to get you to a B-plus, A-minus level. That's his ceiling. But he's also generally, his floor is like a B-minus. Mm-hmm. And he's going to give you that good consistency and be a good quarterback. Where Park can get you an A++++, but he's also got a little bit of tendency to trust his arm too much and gamble way too far and turn something over. And I think with him, he's just got to reel in that talent and just say, okay, I can make this throw, but I shouldn't. And that's something that he's been doing forever because, you know, a guy that's got an arm like that has been able to throw the football like, you know, like an NFL player since he's a sophomore in high school.
Yeah.
So he's got a lot of bad habits cooked into him as far as trusting too much where his arm is going. So I think with Park, give him, because he's right now, he's a redshirt sophomore, still a young kid. So
yeah.
Give him a couple years to learn under the same offensive coordinator, and that kid is going to be a terror. He will be a nightmare to deal with once he just makes the right decisions because he throws a fantastic ball and the cat can just flat out run. So I think Park's ceiling is higher, but he's still really, really raw. I think Joel right now, and he's not anywhere near a finished product, but he's a competitor that can do more with his physical tools to give you a good, productive outing rather than being a negative outing. And there was one thing that I saw, which I broke it down. I don't know if you guys saw it or not. On the CFTV Live that we do with Jared Stansbury at Cycle Fanatic, mm-hmm. there was one play that we ran. It was to Dondre Daly, and it was curl flat was from the pocket, and it was perfectly executed. We picked up a blitz. Joel knew that the Mike Backer was the only guy that was going to undercut the route, so he looked the Mike Backer to the side, threw to the field hit Daly right as he was coming out of his break with a lightning seed to him. Daly has enough time to catch, turn, and get 20 extra yards. So we ran curl flat for, I think, maybe a 12-yard route, and we get 31 or something off of it. So little diamonds in the rough like that make me feel like Joel is picking it up pretty well, and something like that can be done again and again. And this is something that I don't remember. I think it was actually Jake Sullivan when he was talking about basketball plays and complimenting Monte Morris on how good he is at point guard. And Austin, you can attest to this too. Sometimes the best play at quarterback is the easiest play.
Yeah.
And make the easy throw, I absolutely. Think understanding with Joel to do that and just understand what the defense is giving you, take the easy throw, make the easy play, and the offense is going to start clicking a little bit more. So a long answer to a short question. I think Joel is the guy for now, and I think, again, I'm fine with two quarterbacks so long as we can execute at a wide receiver level better than we did on Saturday.
So Austin kind of talked about it earlier that, you know, obviously Mike Warren played a lot better, and Coach kind of called him out after the Iowa game, and it seems like he responded to it and says a lot about his mental makeup. Jeff, and I watched the game, and watched the game, you come out of it, and you feel a little bit better about the game, and I think one of the big reasons is because we saw the Mike Warren that we all thought all offseason we would see every single Saturday, and we finally saw him, or at least a lot glimpses of that Mike Warren. So, Jeff, I want to ask you, can we get the same Mike Warren every week, or is it going to take Coach calling him out?
That was still about 80% of Mike Warren.
Yeah.
That was 80% of him. And that's not any indictment on Mike, because he responded to the challenge.
Yep.
But just like wide receivers and quarterbacks have to get on the same page, because with quarterbacks and wide receivers, and there was actually, take a step back to the quarterback question for a second, there's actually a lot of this that happened too, where against a zone, your wide receivers want to sit down, because if you keep run, if you're open at a certain point, so like say you're running behind the linebackers and there's you're open because you've run behind one linebacker and there's another linebacker that's farther out in front of you. Against zone, there are certain routes that you sit because you're already open, and if you keep running, you're going to run yourself covered. So against certain zones, you sit down. Well, a lot of times Joel was expecting a sit down in a different part of the field, or maybe, you know, 4 yards away from where the wide receiver sat down. So there was a lot of balls that looked like they were thrown to nobody, but it was just because they're not quite on the same page yet. And that'll come with repetition, because each guy is going to see it differently. Even though they may be all doing the right thing, it feels slightly different. So like a golfer going for a club in his bag, if you're at 86 yards out, some guys may want a pitching wedge, some guys may want an approach wedge, some guys may want a 9-iron. And it's all just based on feel, and it's different for every guy. Well, to take that back to the running back question, the same thing happens with the running back and the offensive line, where I know conceptually what the offensive line is supposed to do, but I don't know how it feels and looks in person. So because this is the third offensive line that he's dealt with in 3 weeks, and it's only the third time that he's been able to run this Coach Manning scheme, he's still not really, really comfortable. So some people may think, well, why is that big of a deal? Well, because if you're 5'11 and the offensive line is 6'5 on average, the defensive line is 6'3 or 6'4 on average, well, most likely you're not going to be able to see everything that's happening. So what happens is guys will move and you'll block them out of the way, and you have to anticipate what it's going to look like behind them based on where you know guys are going to be going to block somebody else. Mm-hmm. Well, if I don't know where guys are going to be going to block somebody else, there's a little bit of trepidation that I have to feel. And because you're not able to like fully cut loose, because you don't know if you're going to get ear-holed by a Mike linebacker that we didn't get up to. So with Mike, he was still a little bit timid, not in a sense that he doesn't want contact, but in the sense that he doesn't know exactly where things are going to be. So it's like another analogy, because my brain works on analogies, is try turning all the lights off and walking through your house. And if you, in a house that you've been in for a really, really long time, you could go to the bathroom, open the lid, go to the bathroom, flush, wash your hands, and get back to bed basically without turning the lights on.
Right.
If you're in a new house or a new apartment, you have to flip every light on because you can't trust your intuition to it.
Mm-hmm.
So with running back, it's the same thing. Is you're not allowed if you don't have familiarity with the circumstances, meaning the offensive line and the scheme, then you can't fully cut loose and go. So that's one thing that we're still not going to see that out of Mike, probably for the next couple weeks. He may tear up San Jose State, but I still don't think we're going to see 100% of Mike Warren until the end of the season when he's had six, seven games behind this offensive line in this scheme to know exactly where guys are going to be so he can just cut it loose and know that there's going to be a guy there or not going to be a guy there and know where to go and know where to avoid.
Yeah, that was a good analogy. I liked it. It made sense because, I mean – doesn't matter where you live there a long time, lights go out, there's going to be some rooms you're more comfortable with walking around barefooted in the dark than you are, you know, in more rooms that, you know, you're spending more time in. It makes sense with the spending more time around the offensive line, practicing with them every day, being out there on Saturdays, live game action, you're going to have more familiarity with them. Austin, kind of the same deal at running back we have out at wide receiver in the sense the first two games. I think the lone bright spot we felt about the offense was Alan Lazard in that we know how he is an actual big-time wide receiver, what we've all thought all along. He started to really play like it. And then this Saturday, you know, TCU focused on taking them out of him out of the game, and we didn't see him. So how can the Cyclones get him involved in the game, get the ball to him, and have him be effective even when the defense is focused on taking him out of the game?
Right, and it's no secret that he's the best option on offense.
Yeah.
We're all aware of that. He's been making great – he's made great plays the first two games when his number was called upon. You know, you saw a lot of safety help, a lot of linebacker help to a single side. You know, they know that, you know, when all else fails, that we're going to go to number five. So one thing that I kind of – you know, playing in the Big 12 and playing against some good offensive coordinators when we were there, you know, he had Mike Leach, Kingsbury, Art Briles, you have all these guys who we played against who, you know, they kind of adopt the same philosophy. Where in OU, the same way Riley Lincoln, Baker Mayfield, those guys. If you watch their
Riley.
Games, what's that? Lincoln Riley. Is that what I said? What did I
Lincoln say? Riley. Riley Lincoln. Never trust a man with two first names.
Exactly. That's it. But anyway, those guys, if you watch them, early down and distance, they're taking a shot. I mean, they are literally running Alan Lazard, or running their number one receiver down the sideline and throwing it up there. Because we have that ability, you know, in an early down when people are maybe keying on Mike Warren in the run or Joel Lanning in the zone read stuff. Anytime we have a chance to be singled up with Alan Lazard, which was few on Saturday, we've got to go over there. So I think taking a shot early down and distance and, you know, sudden change is another thing where we've got to look his way. Maybe a fumble, we pick up a fumble, you know, big special teams return, something like that. Sudden change, go his way. And the one thing that I kind of adopted from what we ran when we were at Iowa State, we run that quick X screen a lot. You know, if Alan Lazard is getting off coverage in a safety help, so say the corner's off at 7 or 8 yards, but he has a safety help over top, you know, I'm comfortable with Joel Lanning just taking one step and winging it out there and seeing Alan Lazard, you know, he's 6'5", he falls forward, that's 4 yards.
Yeah.
So that's another thing we can do, get him the ball quick. But what's really going to help him and what hopefully will help him now with Trevor Ryan's success on Saturday, those underneath routes and those, you know, the quick hitting routes that he was running, as much as we hope this happens, to try and free up that intermediate to deep zone where we want to get Alan the ball. It's going to be tough just because people are going to be keen on. They know he's 6'5". He's over there by himself a lot. We just got to find more ways. He's not, you know, you guys know, he's not a blazing fast guy. He's not a reverse runner or anything like that. We're not going to try and get him the ball carrying it. He can throw it, though.
He's Keyshawn Johnson. Quicker. He's big. He's a big possession receiver that can do just about it all but doesn't have blazing speed.
Correct.
Yeah, he's more Brandon Marshall than Antonio Brown.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Jeff,
here's
you got
my take
on
that.
Yeah, give it.
My take on that is the other guys have to execute because,
right.
I mean this in no, like, I'm not saying it was sort of kind of, they triple covered Alan Lazard. They played three levels of defense to his side. So generally speaking, and I think this was by design, is because at a certain point, Coach Manning saw, like, hey, they're playing a corner press man or off man. they're playing a safety that's shaded way to his side over the top, and they're still playing a linebacker hooked to curl that side, meaning about between 8 and 15 yards to his side. So they have a guy playing man, a guy playing an underneath zone and an overtop zone to a one receiver side because of Al Mazzard. Now,
well, you know
if
means,
you're
right?
taking if you're taking three dudes to cover one guy, somebody else has to be open. The tailback, the wide receiver, the slot, Dondre Daly, somebody else has to be open. And if they're going to – teams are going to continue to do that because I think TCU – I mean, we scored 20 points. Great. We need to be scoring 30, 35. If teams are going to continue to do that and play an underneath coverage, a man coverage, and a strong zone to that side, tear them apart on the other side and make them make the decision, all right, well, Trevor Ryan's got 102 yards – on slant routes that he's taken because we have one safety to that side, or Trevor Ryan's got 60 and Dondre Daly has 104 and Carson Epps has 55 yards and Al Mazzard only has two catches, but we've scored four touchdowns on that on the other side. The secondary would have to then adjust away, and all of a sudden Allen becomes a viable option again. So you can – I love Austin's idea of running first down shots to him. But I think, again, coming, like I said, from Iowa to this week, is do stuff better, where catch the ball. They ran
simple.
Good enough routes.
Do stuff better.
They threw good enough balls. Do stuff better. Do the same things you're doing, but complete the passes to that side. If Dondre Daly catches, I think he had three drops in the first half. If Dondre catches those three passes and he gets 15 yards a pop, all of a sudden 45 yards of offense go to that side. The defense has to shift over. All of a sudden the second half is much, much different. So from a scheme perspective, there's some stuff you can do, but a plain and simple answer is just win on the side they're allowing you to take is win over there, and that's going to have to free up the other side.
Yeah. Jeff, talking about do stuff better, do you think the offensive line was better on Saturday without Julian Good-Jones?
Without JP. Without JP
yeah,
Gilbert.
Yeah, Philpert, my bad. Yeah, that's what I meant. Sorry.
I think so, and I think so. I think there's two reasons for that, and I think one is, like I said before, you have five dudes that are just scrapping. They're scrapping dudes. Like Pat Scoggins, he's 6'1", maybe 300 pounds, but that dude's a fighter, and that's what you need. I would rather have a 295-pound fighter than a 320-pound turd, and that's what I think the five dudes that are there right now are. It's like I said, Brian Shada is not – he's not that great of an offensive lineman, but he's a really good competitor. And so I think that's reason number one, is that they were trying harder to do the job better. And the other thing is, I think we now have guys playing more natural positions to them, because Nick Fett, his true position, I think, is left tackle. He's a 6'8", 6'7" kid. He's really long. He's pretty athletic for his size. And he's more athletic than Filbert. He's not quite as strong. He's a strong kid, but he's not quite as strong. But at left tackle, you need to be more athletic than you are strong. And I think that's his natural position. So you then get another guy who's good and a fighter at guard. And you have Bobek, who's a really high-quality center. And you have a high-quality center, two fighters at guard. And I think Good-Jones is going to be a really good lineman. But again, he just needs to get more reps. So I think you have guys playing more of a natural position, and they're fighting harder. So they may be less talented, but again, what's the thing I always say with the offensive line? You don't have to have the best five. You have to have the same five.
Yep.
And those five have to play together well, and I think this group plays together well.
So now that we wrapped up the TCU loss, I want to quickly move to the next opponent, San Jose State, which –
sacks.
They look like a sight for sore eyes right now for us as Cyclone fans and Cyclone alumni. Up next on the schedule, playing them at home. They have a 1-2 record. They lost to Tulsa 45-10, and then most recently to Utah 34-17. But they did put 65 points up on FCS Portland State. Basically, their defense sucks. Ranked 108th in the nation defensively, giving up 253 rushing yards per game, which sounds awesome. And another 230 passing yards per game. Austin, how do you see this playing out? How do you think we can attack them as far as, you know, their defense not being very good?
Well, I know I was just a 7-point favorite, and then I think that's true to form. The thing that we have to do, and we haven't done yet this year, is start fast. We've got to have momentum on the first drive. We got to have a great balance of run pass, and we got to sustain drives. Too many three and outs early on in the game, whether it's a drop or a missed throw or a missed assignment. Too many of that stuff, too much of that stuff going on, and that also coincides with being better on first and second down. I've seen way too many third and seven to 15-ish. It's hard to call plays for third and seven plus, third and 10
yeah.
plus.
Yeah, it is.
Don't have many plays for that, for third and 10 plus. So got to be better. I mean, obviously, we've been good. We've been marginal on first down, you know, getting three or four. We want to get 4 yards in a perfect world. We've had some struggles on second down, though. Like I said, we'll be out there, it'll be second and six, and then I just, you know, it's third and seven, third and eight. You know, it's got to be positive plays on second down, which has been killer for us. So I think those things accompanied with, you know, it's a special day at Iowa State, guys. Coach McCartney's going to be back. So I think that brings a little bit more juice into the stadium. There's going to be a lot more. I mean, there's going to be plenty of people there to begin with, but I think it'll be louder than usual. Just seeing Coach Mack back, the guy who is a special place in my heart, you know, recruited me, gave me a chance, gave me an education and an opportunity to play football at Iowa State, and the guy that, you know, you'll see a lot of former guys back this week. So I think that's going to bring extra excitement and juice to this team.
I think it gives us a great time and option to get Mike Warren going the entire passing game, let those guys that are struggling with the routes or catching the football finally get in a rhythm, and let those quarterbacks get in a rhythm and the entire team get in a rhythm offensively, get some wins that are going to help propel these guys mentally and physically for the next few weeks. And, you know, talking about the defense right there with Austin, Jeff, I want to talk to you about our defense. Because San Jose State has a pretty good offense, top 50 offense, 48th overall, I believe. Quarterback Kenny Potter, it looks like he's going to play. He's completing 63% of his passes. How can we, you know, get in there and stop this and try and capture a win at home in the hopes that our offense is producing on the other side of the ball?
Want to know a fun stat?
I love fun stats. Give it to me.
San Jose State is second worst in the country in sacks allowed, and here's a friend of the program, Kirk Holland, tweeted this out this morning, that San Jose State averages allowing a sack every 6.5 pass attempts.
Oh, nice.
So what Iowa State has to do, and I don't know, I haven't watched the film, I haven't done as video research on San Jose State, that's going to be a cause, one of two things for that. Well, another part, or piggybacking off of that, Utah sacked San Jose State 10 times in the game they just played.
Mm-hmm.
10. So that's one of two things, or both, is either they have personnel deficiencies on the offensive line that they can just get pushed around. Like, if maybe their right guard can't hold a grain of salt when you push on him, then he's not a great pass defender. Or they've got a guy who's really aggressive, shoots his hands, and you can do any kind of move you could possibly want. Or the option number two is that they do not understand how to pass off movement. And if that's the case, as a defense, I want to move a lot. If that's the case, if they've shown that they've got dudes that, like, if you run a twist, like a defensive end goes from outside to the A gap, and the tackle goes from A gap outside, and they have shown that they don't pass that off, and they'll follow it, and they get all tangled up on each other, and you get a free shot on the quarterback, do that. Or if it's a personnel thing, what's nice about that is you can tell Justin Thomas to just go hit the quarterback, son, go get him, and have your linebackers play run underneath. Because if they're that bad at protecting the quarterback, you've got to do something to exploit that. Because if a quarterback that's really high efficiency, hit him a couple times. Make him throw before he's ready, before the routes are set up, before the coverage is really fully set, then that efficiency starts to go down. So I think what you do is do exactly what Utah did against them and hit the quarterback, and hit the quarterback a lot. So I think that our defense is set up pretty well to do that, because DeMond Tucker, Mitch Myers, and Justin Thomas are all really good pass rushers. So I think that those guys have a chance to make the quarterback feel uncomfortable. And Austin, when a quarterback is uncomfortable, even the routine plays are not easy.
Absolutely.
What? So I hate to be this guy, guys, and I'm going to be, but I think it's a good question because of how the schedule sets up for the rest of the year. We all know the league we play in, the Big 12, it doesn't seem to be as good as it's always been, but I mean, there's still some very talented players, really good coaches, and good programs and teams within the conference. Does that make this game a must-win, Austin?
You know, with this team, I think any win is great. I mean, this is in that aspect, I will say it's a must-win. This is a lesser opponent coming into your house. They're traveling all the way across country to be here. And this team needs a win more than anything just for their confidence alone. I mean, this has got to be something that's going to propel them. So, this alone, and along with Kansas, maybe the only time that we're favored all year, probably the only time, it's almost a certainty if we're favored against Kansas. But that predicts, you know, that predicament is going to come later. But I think you have to win this game for more than anything. I mean, it's not for these coaches. It's for these kids and their psyche going forward. Coach Campbell, I mean, these guys know they're going to be here for a while. This is going to take some time. And that's one thing that we always, you know, we talk about the things they've done wrong, the things they've done good. Guys, these guys have only been together for, what, 8 months now?
Yeah.
Not even 7 months. I mean, it's going to take some time. And I think Cyclone fans collectively know that, you know, you got to start from the bottom to get to the top, and then we're definitely down there right now. So it's going to take some time with this team, but, you know, steadily weekly improvement. But I think this is, that's a must-win for confidence purposes.
Jeff, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't think anything truly this season is a must-win because they're not really playing for anything.
Yep, that's another good point.
I think from a sense of not necessarily a must-win for the sake of getting stuff done, because I think over time, Coach Campbell, the way they recruit, the way they coach, again, I did this at the CFTV. I'm going to shout out Coach Campbell for sticking to his guns and not tolerating behavior that is subpar. And J.P. Filbert is still not listed on the depth chart. I don't know what he did. I have a good idea of what happened, and it's not against the law. It's not a university code of conduct violation, but it's something that was extremely disrespectful and has no place. And if a kid is still going to continue to own that, to not own that behavior and improve from it, he doesn't deserve to play. And I love the fact that he's sticking to his guns and keeping him out. And so that's a side note. So I think over time, we're going to get to where Toledo was, where you're winning more games than you're not.
That'll be
nice. This game is not necessarily a must-win for a sense of getting to that point.
Yeah.
It's a must-win for the sense of getting to that point sooner. Because the kids then see, oh, this is what you mean by doing this, and we can finally get a payoff, which gets you a little bit more buy-in. And that buy-in comes a little faster. Whereas if they lose this game, that puts you back a couple games, a couple weeks, to earn that fully vested trust of the guys. So it's not necessarily a must-win, but it would be a really nice to win because it accelerates the process of improvement.
Yeah, and, you know, for me, it's obviously not a must-win as far as they got to win this game in order to get to a bowl game this year to make sure they get to six wins. I just think mentally, you know, it's so tough on players and staff, and, you know, winning covers things up as well as winning makes you feel a little bit better. You get a win and virtually, you know, mentally take a week off from just the beating and the pounding of knowing that, you know, it's going to be a long year, and it already has been a long year. And being able to win a game kind of patches that up for the time being. And obviously, one win means you're not going to go winless for the year. And like Austin said, the only two on the schedule right now, it looks like, that they've got really good shots to go in and match up well with are this against San Jose State and then, you know, in a few weeks with Kansas. So with that, put a bow on all of last week and preview the San Jose State game. We'll move on to Austin's favorite part of the show, the gambling segment. And Austin's riding in high not only because he's picking so well, but his Vikings found a new quarterback.
Sammy Bradford.
And Sam the Man got them a win. How about that, Austin?
Gosh, it feels good. Week two to beat the Packers. No one I hate more on the schedule than Aaron Rodgers and Jordan J. Nelson. Beating them was great. Sam Bradford looked great, guys. You got to love the fact that he took it on his shoulders, and that's what you want to see. He's a professional. Sam Bradford is a professional. But anymore,
it's time to move on from Bridgewater, right?
If he was,
If
he was like at any other job, he would still be in like the HR orientation phase.
Training.
Like he got there
2 weeks.
He got there like seven now because it's Tuesday. He got there 17 days ago. Like
I'll be there this weekend, guys.
Yeah, Carolina.
Vikings, Carolina this weekend. I'll be there. Watching my boy AJ and watching my team, the Vikings. Here we go. Aaron J. That guy. I love that guy. All right, guys. Let's knock it off here. Let's go over records first. Zach, 1-1 in college. Jeff, 0-2 in college. Austin, 1-1 in college. And Jeff and Austin, both 2-0 in the NFL. And Zach, the lone 1-1 in the NFL. Our NCAA game this week.
There's a lot of football left.
You said that last year and the year before and the year before. A lot of – okay, so first game here, we're going to go NCAA. We have Michigan State at home after a big win against Notre Dame against Wisconsin. Wisconsin coming off a kind of a tough win against Georgia State at home. So how do you guys see this one? Michigan State's a 5.5-point favorite at home.
Give me Michigan State in the points.
Okay, Zach wants Michigan State. He wants Sparty. What do you think, Jeff?
Sparty all the way. You don't come in to East Lansing and expect to play well. Now, Wisconsin can travel because they run the ball and they play defense. But I think the game against LSU showed more about LSU being not where we thought they were than it did for Wisconsin being better than we thought they were. So I'm going to take Sparty by about 10-ish. So give me the Spartans to cover.
I agree with you guys here. This is another bad thing. What are we all doing agreeing lately? Michigan State, I don't know if you guys watched them play Notre Dame last week. I was flipping back and forth.
The Irish.
And I thought Notre Dame, after watching them play Texas, I thought Texas-Notre Dame was a very good football game. And I thought Notre Dame was still going to have a chance, you know, on the outside looking in, to be in that picture at the end of the year because of, you know, their status and they are independent and they have their Notre Dame. But that's done now.
Turns out Texas isn't as good as everyone thought they were.
Yeah, here we go again. Charlie's job's on the line again.
Yep.
Moving on, NFL. NFL game. Jeff's beloved Denver Broncos.
Woo! 2-0. You're 2-0.
2-0. Denver Broncos. They are heading to the Queen City. That's not Charlotte, North Carolina. They're heading to Cincinnati to play the Bengals, the Bungaloids. AJ Green and Andy Dalton company is a 3-point favorite at home. Vegas has got something here, guys. What do you think?
Give me Denver in the points because, unlike everyone else Cincinnati plays, A.J. Green is not going to be able to pick on this Denver defense or their corners. So I got Denver winning.
Okay, well, I was going to pick the same thing, but this is really – when the line is completely different than what you expect, it always makes me feel really nervous about picking against it. Like,
go with your gut, Woody. Don't cave to Vegas.
I'm going with my heart and my gut. I'm going to take the Broncos. But Cincinnati's favored for some reason. And there's some juju magic that Las Vegas knows that I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised, even as a Bronco fan, if Cincinnati comes out and wins this one by, you know, 4. Because it's going to have to be like 17-13. Because ain't nobody scoring more than 25 points against the Broncos. But it's – I don't know. The line is weird, which gives me pause, but I'll still take the Broncos.
Fading you guys. Give me the Bengals. Give me the Bengals -3. I think – yeah, I agree. There's something going on here. And, you know, the Bengals haven't played up to their true potential, and I think the Broncos rely a lot on that defense, which rightfully so. It's a very good defense. But this is going to be a test for the young Simeon kid going into a hostile environment, playing a pretty good defense that the Bengals have. I like the Bungaloids
and
to cover that spread.
They have one of the biggest boneheads on defense in the NFL in Vontaze Burfict.
Hey, Mike Zimmer really liked Vontaze Burfict. That's why I like Mike Zimmer. He can take, you know, he can take oatmeal and make it into pasta primavera, man. Let's go. I'm excited.
Vontaze was always really good. I remember watching him on film when we were in college.
So good he what? Was he like 8th-round draft pick?
That's because he was a head case.
Did he play at Arizona State?
Yeah, he was
a head case.
Because
he was a head case, and he was fat as hell.
And he still is a head case.
What are you, like 270 in college playing at Arizona State, and he averaged like a personal foul a game?
Yeah, he did average a personal foul a game, I know that. But it's because he was a head case, but he's really good. Austin, is that it for you?
That's all we got, man. Until next week, guys.
Oh, that'll do it for us. Thanks for tuning in to this week's edition of Barely Audible on CycloneFanatic.com. Make sure you tune into us each week as we talk all things Iowa State football, breaking down games, schemes, assignments, stats, and previewing Cyclones games. We'll talk to you next week. Go State. Peace.